I'm joined by Dr. Michael Ash, the president of Southeastern Community College, and he joins me each month. We talk about the college, we talk about new programs, we talk about how the adjustment to 2020 and 2021 is going, and again, this has been a strange year, to say the very least. But you are, so okay, you've got students back, you've got campus, so you've got classes underway, and you had kind of sort of laid out all of the parameters the last time we talked. How is everything going?
Well, first off, good morning, Steve, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. Things are going pretty well, actually. I'm pretty pleased with how our community, our college community, has adapted to some social distancing. Our classrooms are social distanced. Our students still have some difficulty with not going down the hallway as a group, but many of them are very cooperative. Most all of them are wearing their masks. They're not always wearing them properly, so we have to encourage them. And then our faculty and staff have been really, really understanding and cooperative. Many of our faculty actually are wearing face shields so that people who might have hearing issues can see lips, as well as masks have a tendency to muffle the sound and making, therefore, the faculty have to speak harder, louder, and make their voice to carry. So they're all adjusting pretty well. We're pretty happy with that. Now, the thing that we're working on is we're going back over our reopening plan and saying, okay, now what, because we wrote that thing in May, June. So what has changed since then to today going forward so that can be most up to date? So that's our latest process related to COVID.
You know, we've had the positive rate, or the rate of positive infections, or rate of positive, I guess, new cases is being tracked on by every school in the state. I'm talking secondary schools. And once they hit a certain percentage, then it changes things. For instance, a football game on Friday night, if we fall to six or below, fans can be in the stands. If we do not, then only those, the parents or the whatever, the individuals associated with the player or the band can be. Mm-hmm. And social distancing obviously has to be, and masks have to be worn at the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a patchwork quilt. We've got some of the, I was looking at some of the pro football teams have fans, a limited number. Some have none. And same situation is in the high school. So in terms of dealing with something like that, do you have, do you follow those, that percentages? Mm-hmm. And is that something that is reflective also in your decision making or in terms of how things operate at SEC?
We do follow and track the positivity rate per county. Des Moines County, Lee County, and Henry County, those three main counties. And then we do have a portion of Loisa County. So we track those positivity rates. One thing that we have not done yet that we're preparing to do, and that's to put together a dashboard and make that available to our constituents. What we do collect are student request for absences that are related to COVID. Now, let me explain. That doesn't mean they have COVID. It just means some issue in their life may cause them to have to miss classes. For instance, they might have a child where the child care system has shut down, or they might have a kid that's on the AB schedule and they have to be home with their child during the B schedule because they're actually on an A schedule. So there are a number of those types of things. Could be that they got exposed and were just, they're quarantined until they've had their test and test results. Or they could have gotten actually exposed and then developed the COVID. That number is actually quite small as far as we are aware. Now, we are counting on our local departments of health to do the contact tracing because that's an enormous task. But we haven't had any feedback from any of the counties as far as there being a really big issue or any real issue at all.
And we've been seeing the rate in Des Moines County and in Lee County both going down.
Going down, yes. And we're just a tad over 6% now,
yeah,
is the positivity rate here in Des Moines County. And I think Lee County has fallen to like 7% or something of that,
right,
nature. So and interestingly enough, what we have determined with our faculty and staff, and we've had some that have had to stay home to be quarantined because they've had some type of exposure. But what we have found is that those exposures are actually coming from without the college,
okay,
outside of the college, and not as a result of students carrying things in the college. For instance, one of our faculty members might have a child who has,
right,
gone off someplace and gets involved with a group that somebody in that group has had COVID. They get exposed, they bring it home, and now the parent is exposed, at least theoretically, until they've had their tests run. But that's outside the college. And so, but nonetheless, we are taking precautions with the faculty and staff to make sure that they're safe, that they're healthy, and that they don't carry that then into the college.
Now, I suppose one advantage you do have, the test site is relatively close,
yes,
to SCC.
Yes, it is.
As in right there.
Right there.
I don't know how fast of a test that they have. Do you know how long a test takes?
Actually, you still have to go on the Test Iowa site, get a number. You don't have to get an appointment. You can just drive your car in and have your test. After the test is taken, then it's within 24 hours,
okay,
that a test result comes back. If it comes back positive, you the test that had the testing done are made aware, but also the Department of Health is made aware, the State Department of Health, and then they pass it along to wherever that goes from there. We the college are not in that train of communication. So it's really incumbent upon the individual who's been tested and comes out positive or negative, and as well as the Department of Health getting back to us saying, hey, you have this issue, you have that issue, and so we're going to involve ourselves with contact tracing.
So a dashboard would have a number of features on it, was,
right,
that right?
Well, first looking at students.
Okay.
We have a program, a process, where if a student has any issue related to COVID, they call a number and some information is gathered from them, and then that information about that student is sent immediately to the faculty of that student. So if a student has three classes, that faculty member is notified. Each of those three faculty are notified that, say in this case, Johnny Smith is he's filed a form saying that he is not going to be in class because COVID-related. Again, not to confuse that with COVID,
right,
but COVID-related. So we collect that on an ongoing basis. We also collect anything with our residence halls. Right now, we have no cases in our residence halls. All students who had either exposed or had COVID, and we had them quarantined, are out of quarantine, and they've shown all the signs of having positive recovered or not developed it at all. So we track that, and then we track it by site. So how many in West Burlington, how many at Fort Madison, how many at Mount Pleasant, how many at Keokuk, and we report that out.
Okay.
That's one part of it. Then the next part we're going to be adding is the faculty staff cases. And again, it's the same thing. If we have a faculty member who has a child who can't be taken to daycare or has a school issue, then they're, and because of COVID, we're saying, okay, you stay home, you take care of your kiddo, but let us know, and then we'll track that. So not every case related in that sense is because of being exposed or even having developed. So we're tracking that, and then we're also put on there the Department of Health, the Iowa Department of Health map that an individual,
okay,
can track on that, and can go to the state map, click on Des Moines County, and see what the positivity rate is.
I asked Pat Cohen last week he's superintendent of Burlington Schools. I said, Pat, is this the most challenging, difficult year since you've been a superintendent of schools? He said, without a doubt, yes. I'm going to ask you the same question. Is this the most challenging year that you've ever had?
It absolutely has. First, I've never, ever, in all of my years in education, experienced anything like this. Secondly, it has had, it isn't like, it's something that hit us like the flu, and we had a lot of people infected with that, and then we recovered and we got back on with business. This has been something that's impacted all of us. I mean, all of us wear masks. All of us are being impacted by this. Thirdly, the financial piece of all of this. One, what is costing us to make our campuses safe? We've issued masks to all of our faculty and staff. We've issued to the faculty who want. We've issued shields, and we have to pay for all that. And we are waiting for FEMA to see if they're going to reimburse any of that, but so far nothing from them. And we also have to have the sanitizers, and we bought three machines to actually go into a classroom and vaporize that classroom with virus-killing material to sanitize the room.
My goodness.
We've had to buy all of those things. We've been tracking this thing since March 13th is when we became aware of it. I've had to deal with the fears, the concerns, the anxieties. I've had to deal with whether or not the state would come through, how they would come through on their financial support, and nobody really knew how this was going to impact our enrollment.
And we still don't know what is the problem. We still don't know when this thing is going to end, do we?
No, we do not. And I think of all of it, that is the most anxious-producing element of it.
That's the million-dollar question.
That's, my goodness. And then on top of that, I mean, that is on top of what we normally do.
Okay.
It isn't like we just stopped doing what we've been doing. We just focus on this.
Well, the other thing that I know that in the secondary, I know Burlington, and I know my wife's a teacher, and they are doing where she is, Burlington as well, and I guess most schools, they're doing what they call parallel programming. That is that not only are there in-class students, but there's also an online, every class is also available online. Is that, are you doing something similar?
Not really. We do have online courses, but they've been designed to be online. We have face-to-face, and those have been designed to be face-to-face. We do have what we call a hybrid, so there could be some of the classes actually done face-to-face, some of the classes done online. Now, if we have a student who has to be quarantined and feels healthy enough, then it is feasible that faculty member could put it up on Zoom, if you will,
right,
and a student could participate while the regular class is happening, face-to-face class is happening, could participate using the Zoom. So we do have some of that available to our students who get quarantined. But we don't have the parallel, this class is going on at the same time that class is going on online.
From an enrollment standpoint, have you lost any enrollment because of this situation?
Well, if you'd asked me that question back in June, July, I would have been really expressing a great deal of discouragement, because we were at 20-25% down. Today we're down 5%. So in some respects I'm going, yay, we're only down 5%, but that is even that's a difficult place, because we build a budget based on zero growth. So when you have a downturn, then that
and a budget that's not based on utilizing all these extra funds to just try to be prepared, right?
Exactly so. And so it's a challenge. But we're thankful that we're not down 10% or 12% or 15 or 25% for that matter. But it was really a difficult summer to get through. Because I had no knowledge. The legislature was out until June. So they weren't even meeting, so we had no idea what the SGA would be, the state general aid. And then, of course, nobody knows about enrollment until we get here in August. And then it's like, well, can we – so our group has really worked hard to reach out to students, for us to communicate to students that we're providing a safe environment. And thus far, it really has been a safe environment, and I'm very proud of the hard work that's been done. But yes, we did take it on the nose as far as, because I really felt like if except COVID, if COVID hadn't happened, that we were really hitting our stride now, and that we would have probably seen an increase in enrollment. Our international student population was decimated. We went from 152 students, and we were shooting towards 175. Right. We went from 152 down to 40.
Well, a lot of that would be because of travel restrictions.
Restrictions, and again, all COVID-related.
Yeah.
They couldn't leave their country, or they couldn't get into our country, or there was some fears about getting here and then maybe getting infected, and then, or another fear that we heard from students were that they would get here, and then the college would go from face-to-face to online, and then they would have to go back home.
Yeah.
So, There were a number of elements that factored into that, but nonetheless, we lost over 100 international students that were planning to come here, and that impacts our athletics,
right?
But also impacts our enrollment and our tuition dollars.
Yeah, we're going to talk about athletics. Athletics itself, I think, one of the things we talked about also the last time was, you know, there are schedules. Some of your fall sports are continuing on. I believe cross country is still going on. I think it's golf. Is that right?
Golf
is still going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that volleyball is, as far as I know, that's been moved later in the year. Is that right?
Into the spring semester.
Uh-huh. And basketball,
spring,
which is also in. So it really. Here's a question, and it's the unanswerable question is if the situation is not significantly changed by the time we get to spring, do you have a plan for are these all on hold then again? Is that
No, I think the point of putting it off was to try to wrestle with the questions of, one, how severe would this be?
Right.
Two, what do we need to do to make sure our athletes are safe? How do we travel those athletes safely? And then actually be in a position where we do some competition in a sense of scrimmages and whatnot, so sort of a test run on some things. And I think so far all of those have gone well. And I think that if we remain status quo at this point with this COVID, that I anticipate that we will have athletics in the spring. All of our sports would have it. Now, there could be some question of whether or not fans are involved.
Right.
And you're right back to what you were saying earlier about even Burlington High School. If they have a certain level of positivity, then maybe they don't allow fans or a number of fans. We may be well in the same situation, which really impacts our basketball, both men and women's basketball, because we get good crowds for those. But for golf and track and cross country and volleyball gets a good share of audience as well. But for some of these other sports, they don't necessarily draw a crowd, so there's really not any major issue with them.
One of my understanding is the basketball season that you are planning is pretty much restricted to Iowa.
Yes.
Is that right?
Correct.
And now I know that the major colleges and universities they're doing regular testing of athletes. Are you going to be doing something like that as well?
Yes. And one of the precautions that we'll take when we're traveling our kids, that before they get on the bus, they'll be tested. They'll be do some health screening to ensure that they are not sick or not asymptomatic before they actually get on the bus. And then we will travel to whatever place of competition, and we will have expected that school would have done the necessary things to sanitize and prepare for our team to arrive, as we would do for them. And so the hope, the expectation is that kids getting on the bus to travel to wherever are going to be healthy, and they're going to return healthy.
Now, overnight accommodations, that might be, you will have some overnight trips?
There well could be. When we travel to Iowa Western or to parts west, there would be some need for that.
Okay, but obviously that will also be something that will have to be covered or crossed when you get to that bridge, is that right?
But for the most part, and this will be pretty much of a shift from what we've done in the past, is that those closer in venues, There will be some early morning bus trips.
Right.
And some
You're going to try and do a round within the day,
right.
which would make sense, obviously. So it's a lot of questions and still you're working your way, feeling your way through for the answers.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think we used the analogy last time. We're looking for the light switch in a dark room.
A very good analogy, because it really is we don't know when this is going to end.
No.
And we don't know when a vaccine will be available. We don't know. What we don't know is more than what we do know. We know more than we did, but we don't know much.
No, and we don't know the critical pieces.
Right.
Even the debate as to whether or not we would have a vaccine, when we would have a vaccine, how effective would the vaccine be? Would our people take the vaccine? I mean, just all of those, now that you have the potential of a vaccine, answers or opens all kinds of new questions. And then there's still no answers.
Well, you've gotten a few more answers since the last time I talked to you. Hopefully, the next time we chat, we'll have more answers.
Yes.
And we're going to bid adieu to Dr. Michael Ashe, and good luck, and let's find more answers.
Thanks so much, Steve.